BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan MacLeod. I'm in Four Ways today to meet with the executives from a very rare thing these days, a new tech listing on the JSE. The company is called Foresight Holdings. It's listing this month on the JSE's Alternative Exchange, or AltX. And I'm joined by Antony van Rensburg, the CEO, and Hilton Goodhead, the executive head of Digitata Innovation. Digitata is one of Foresight's big subsidiaries. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Tech Central podcast today.
Aye.
Antony, if I could start with you, tell me a bit about Foresight Holdings and why it's going to market.
Duncan, Foresight Holdings is a holdings company that we've created between a number of entrepreneurs. And a number of those are the founders of Digitata, and we came together about a year ago. And we shared our vision around where we think the world is going to go in technology, most specifically around the wave of digitization that we are busy experiencing in the world, which people refer to as Industry 4 or the fourth industrial revolution. So we did spend a lot of time around the table to try and understand what is the best mechanism to survive as a technology company into the future. How do we build a company like that? And also, how do we make sure that we can actually keep relevant with technology? I think, as you all know, that technology does change on a day-to-day basis. When we look at Industry 4, it's a rather complex solution that you need to put into place to be able to benefit from that as an organization. So what we did with Foresight Holdings, we said, you know, we basically need four capability types to make an Industry 4 solution work. So the first one is the ability to be able to visualize your business in a digitized format, to understand how you're actually going to implement that, and then also understand how it's going to benefit your revenue, how it's going to benefit your customers. So that's a very, very important skill and capability you need to have into an organization. The second one is the ability to digitize. So how do we take all of the consumers and all of the processes, how do we digitize them? Another very important skill that you need to have and a capability in the organization. And then the fourth one is, how do we analyze in all of this data? Millions and billions of data bits that you collect in real time. What do you do with this? So how do you collect the data? How do you analyze the data? And then how do you build an algorithm around that? So that's the third capability that we talked about. And then the fourth one is then the ability to optimize. So how do we take all of the data, we take all of the sensors, and we put this all into one big pot, and we are able to optimize this in real time. And that's where Foresight came through. It came from those four capabilities that you need to have in place. And hence, that is also our acquisition strategy for subsidiaries inside into the Foresight Holdings Group, whereby we are looking at those four capabilities. Can we acquire them? Do companies or Industry 4 companies have those particular skills and capabilities? Do they have the algorithms? Can they deal with the data? And then put them together into a number of what I call industry solutions. So with going to market with the listing inside Digitata, we do have then solutions for the telecommunications industry. We have solutions for the media industry. We have solutions inside the property industry. with our acquisitions that we are going to bring in now in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we're going to expand that to mining and manufacturing.
Okay. So this Foresight Holdings, is it an amalgamation of a number of businesses? Who are the main people behind it? Is it principally Digitata at this stage? Have you brought other businesses into the Foresight Holdings group ahead of the listing?
With the listing, we have all decided that Digitata will be the main listing. Mm-hmm. So Foresight did the formal acquisition of Digitata on the 1st of July, and that's what we've prepared for listing. As people will know that's been through this process, it's a quite an enormous process to get a company listed on the stock exchange. Mm. Within that, we decided from a cost and speed perspective that we are first going to take Digitata to listing on Thursday, which is around the corner. Yep. And with that, we've also concluded a number of acquisitions now in the mining and manufacturing space, which is a company called H Technologies. They're a systems integrator company. We have acquired a engineering company that does real-time optimization called Blue ESP. And then what we've done is we've also brought along a number of companies that we've created under Foresight South Africa, which was our initial listing vehicle when myself and Gary started up about 2 years ago on this journey.
Sorry, who's Gary?
Gary Larason is our executive for mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. So the main team that started up 2 years ago was myself and Gary, which helped with the mergers and acquisitions. I had the ideas, I knew the industries, I knew the people, I understand the technology. So between us, we formed the initial core partnership. And then when we met up with the Digitata guys about a year ago, we brought that whole team also came on board to help us to complete the Foresight listing. So on our management team, it's equal split between myself and Gary, and then also Tinus, who's the CEO of Digitata today, that sits in the management team, and then also Jock, who's the CFO for Foresight Holdings.
Okay. Yep. Antony, what's your background? What's your career history?
So by training, I'm an industrial engineer. Mm-hmm. I've studied a number of years to complete my my bachelor's degree in industrial engineering, and then through time I went up to a PhD in industrial engineering, and that's actually where I laid the first foundation for the ability for digitization. How we digitize a business in its completeness, how we then optimize that business with various types of technologies. Unfortunately, it was about 20 years ago, so a bit early. So I think from that background, from my understanding and how I've progressed through my career, I've spent all my time and effort in the ability to bring IT into business, to optimize business. And one advantage I do have is I've worked in aviation, telco, banking, manufacturing. I've worked in government. So I've got a broad exposure around how businesses operate in different verticals, different industries, but also from a strategic level right up down to a data level. So just for interesting sake, I did have to retrain myself in data science. It took me about 3 to 4 years to retrain myself in the art and skills of data science. So from that change perspective, I had to redo, I think, another degree many, many years after I've done university.
So give us some color in terms of the size of the business you're bringing to market on Thursday. We're listing on the Altex this Thursday. Revenues, profitability, some of the key metrics.
So in terms of the business that we bring to the market on Thursday, currently Digitata does a turnover of about $20 million US dollars per year. It runs on a operating margin of around about 18%, and it currently employs about 150 people across the world. Operates in 15 countries throughout the world, and its algo serves around about 60 million end consumers on a day-to-day basis. With the mining and manufacturing acquisitions, we are are busy executing now. It's going to bring another 15 countries to the play. So in full, we'll have about 25 countries that we will have customers in, with 1,700 corporate customers. And the revenue split will then be around about 60-40 between telco and mining and manufacturing, which our estimates, our forecast right now, will bring up the total revenue to about $40 million US dollars. Into the into the hold when we do the listing.
Okay, so you earn most of your revenue outside of South Africa. Are you going to be reporting your numbers in dollars? Or
yes,
rand?
The reporting will be in dollars. Foresight Holdings is a Mauritian-based company. Part of the agreement was to create an offshore company in Mauritius when we did the Digitata acquisition. Digitata is an offshore company. So our reporting is in dollars, and we've done basically inward listing into the stock exchange.
Your head office is based here in Johannesburg?
Head office is based in Mauritius.
In Mauritius,
yes.
Okay. But your biggest team is here in
Johannesburg? The development support team does sit here in South Africa. So obviously what we've done there is to make use of the rand-dollar exchange in terms of moving costs and driving revenue in different parts of the world. I think that's quite a core part of doing business, to understand where you can actually have maximum leverage around your revenue base and your cost base.
Okay. Hilton, let me bring you in here. Digitata is obviously the rumpa of this business. It's being listed on the JSE now. Tell me a bit about Digitata. I know the dynamic tariffing side of the business. I think you work with MTN, if I'm not mistaken, and a range of other operators around the world. Tell me a bit more about the origins of the business. I know it's been going for about a decade, and what areas you focus on.
Yes, that's right, Duncan. The company's been running for about 10 years now, nearly 11. And it started off in the area of dynamic tariffing. The founders of the company worked in a mobile operator, and we realized that people were quite price sensitive. And what we believed at the time, based on the limited data that we saw, there was an indication that they might be willing to change behavior based on price. I don't know if you remember, in those days, there was an off-peak tariff at 8 o'clock, and that was designed to try and attract people to make calls after 8. What we found is that people were delaying their calls until 8 o'clock and then making them. So that was very successful. In fact, it was so successful that so-called off-peak period became the peak period, causing major problems, and to the extent where I was, something like 70% of the CapEx budget was being spent just to put in equipment for the 8 o'clock period, which was, of course, generating much less revenue than the other times. So we saw that there was an inefficient allocation of capital assets, and realized at that point that there must be something more clever that could be done. And so we took this idea and ran with it further, Digitata arose from that. And what essentially we've done is taken that willingness for people to change behavior to the ultimate extreme, to the extent where we change the price on every cell in the network every hour of the day based on the forecasted load. And in that way, we are able to level out the load on the network, creating a much flatter response, giving rise to much higher utilization of equipment, and also bringing about pricing that is attractive to certain groups in the market. So, for example, we've got customers in Uganda that have achieved traffic levels on their network at 3 o'clock in the morning that are only 15% lower than 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And so what you can see there is the willingness of people to change behavior, to make calls at very apparently inconvenient times in reward for getting a lower tariff. And this goes to what Antonio was saying earlier, where part of the fourth industrial revolution's objective is to optimize assets by using them cleverly. And pricing is one of the very strong mechanisms to change that type of behavior. And we believe that this can be taken to many other vertical industries, mining, retail, banking, power distribution, all of these things. Mm-hmm. Just think about, for example, what could be done if you had dynamic tolls on the highways. You could spread the traffic load out And so these enormously expensive highways could be used much more efficiently, and people at the rush hour would get a faster trip because some people have chosen to travel earlier. So we see an enormous application for these ideas.
Fascinating.
Duncan, maybe just around that, if you follow research and trends going forward around digitization and Industry 4 and the impact it is going to have, most thought leaders in the world currently are looking at using the technology to basically optimize process and capacity. I haven't come across any thought leadership around using pricing or dynamic pricing as a mechanism to distribute capacity and revenue inside those networks. So I think for me what's very, very exciting here is the ability to take that thought leadership and also the capability of Digitata to say, you know what, in the world, we are world leaders around understanding how to do intelligent pricing on digital networks. Now, let's use that in various other industries, and especially how the guys do it gives us that, I think, that advantage, which I haven't seen in any description or research currently up to date as being part of Industry 4.
Okay. Hilton, you guys must have developed some pretty advanced intellectual property in-house to do this dynamic tariffing. Just tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, we've been working at it for 10 years, as I said, and it's a number of mistakes, but eventually I think we're converging on some ideas that are quite powerful. And quite recently we've been applying some of the modern machine learning techniques and big data. As Antoni says, these to do this properly, and particularly down to an individual level. Previously, we were working very much in large groups of customers and looking at their mass behavior, but we are now looking at individuals, and to do that, you need to know and understand the individual very well. So their own details around their calling patterns and so on is important, and hence the need to store very large volumes of data, which falls into this big data classification. And by the way, what we found is that after trying various tools and techniques, we seem to have actually converged on a set of techniques and tools that are, in fact, used by some of the big scientific investigations that are going on at the moment, the mega science projects, like the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, and the very recent discoveries of gravity waves. The people running those big scientific projects are using the same sort of tools that we are, or maybe you should say the other way around. We've converged on the same things that they've discovered as being useful. So we're pleased about that development, which means that we're in good company, perhaps. And really, we've also found the value of having some experience from outside the computer science area. So, for example, we've got a team of actuaries here now. People with economics backgrounds, and maybe eventually we'll get people with behavioral sciences type backgrounds, because a lot of this goes to human psychology as well, not just the hardcore numbers.
So a lot of the work that you've done here with local operators, I'd imagine you can just replicate that quite easily overseas, or am I wrong? Can you take what you've developed for the local operators and simply replicate it overseas and perhaps enjoy a fairly good margin as a result?
Yes, I think we can. And that talks to the fact that people really, at the end of the day, are driven by the same things everywhere. What we do find is that all of our customers say our customers are different. They behave uniquely. And that's not actually true. Everyone is driven by the same things. And price and economy are very powerful mechanisms in everyone's life. And it really doesn't matter what part of the economic spectrum you come from, you know, whether it's the bottom or the very top. At the absolute number might change, but everyone's driven by the same principles. Everyone likes a good deal. Everyone likes to feel that they've been taken special care of, and so on. So human psychology is the same no matter where you come from.
Antoni, let me come back to you, and let's come back to the listing. Maybe take me through the mechanics of the listing. How much are you hoping to raise through this process? How much of a free float is there going to be?
So in terms of the our roadshow that we just completed, took us about 7 weeks now. Our initial estimate was to raise 300 million through the listing, which was around about 140 million to be used to complete all the acquisitions I've just talked about. And then the rest of the 160 million was to fund what we call incubation projects and also expansion initiatives that we have. So currently what we want to do is we want to expand into places like China, Australia, and the North Americas with some of the other technologies that we have in the mining and manufacturing industry. So that was our target that we set aside for the capital raising exercise. In terms of the free float, that represents around about 30% of the shares on the market. The guys are we've closed up, the prospectus were closed on Thursday. They're still busy doing the final numbers on the subscriptions, but it seems to us right now, currently we've raised about 114 million, which gives us the ability to execute on all our acquisitions. Obviously the rest of the 160 million, we've got another set of plans into place to either raise that through a number of various partnerships. I think one of the things that the market came back to us, and quite interesting, we had, I think right now, if I think about the numbers around about, we've got about 1,000 investors that invested in the listing. Some of the largest investors are still busy chewing through the valuation models. Mm-hmm. I think the difficult year for them is that Industry 4 is a new wave. It's a new technology. It's a new market. We've only seen a huge amount of conversation going around this for the past 10 months, 12, 15 months. So it's still very, very, very new. Everybody knows about it, but it's still very new. So from an investor perspective, I think a lot of people are still saying, what is this all about? What is this going to do? And that's what we found through the roadshows. A lot of people don't really have grasped, you know, what this technology is going to do, how the world is going to change, and then from an investor perspective, what can they actually gain from investing inside into these new technologies? And it's like what Hilton described, you know, it's artificial intelligence, engines, machine learning, big data, all the words that we're hearing. Mm. But I think from an investor perspective, they're saying, okay, but what is it? Is it just a hype, or where are we going with this? So we are now still busy with some of the larger investor groups, assisting them with the valuation models. I think that's what we've seen in the raising process. But the smaller investors actually saw the opportunity and they invested, which I'm very, very, very happy about.
Okay. Did you get some interest from big institutional investors as well?
We do have a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. We've seen about 60. We did about 60 presentations all over the place. There are interests, very interesting around the big technology or telcos. Operators are very interested. The big technology companies are also very interested. But I think the guys haven't been able to really understand how do they value something like this. Because what we've done with the listing is we've also tried to create, we've also tried to do a capital raising around new incubation projects. What Hilton has just said to you, we're busy combining intelligent pricing with retail. So it's a new venture. There's no reference case for this. How do you evaluate the value of that? So I think with those complexities, we will go back to the market, to the large guys. We're still busy working with them. But I think for now, I'm extremely comfortable that we actually got a lot of support from the smaller investors.
Yeah.
That is backing the business.
Yeah. I mean, do you find on the JSE's AltX exchange that the big institutional investors perhaps are a little bit more nervous?
Yes.
Because these are seen as earlier stage companies than main board listings?
Exactly, yeah. So what we've seen is that there's lots of investment criteria. Obviously, Small caps are not very high on the list, and we've had many feedback where people said that right now they don't believe small caps are the place to put the money in.
Yes, in fact, the small cap space in South Africa is pretty dead at the moment.
Yes. Mm. So, but what do you do when you've got a bunch of entrepreneurs around the table? We all believe in the future. We've all been in tech for many, many years, and we say, we can offer a better solution to the market space. We can offer something unique, and we can actually offer people the ability to invest into these pure technologies, and all of this still makes money. Mm. So the reason why we went, I think quite importantly, why we went the Altex route was very particular around being able to complete a number of acquisitions, which is a lot easier for us to execute on the Alt-X than on the main board. So our intention is to move over to the main board.
Okay.
Our targets, we should be able to comply to the minimum profit level by December, and then after we've done all the acquisitions, we'll move on to the main board. So that is on our short-term plan anyway to do that.
Did you consider other alternatives in terms of raising capital than a listing? And why did you ultimately decide on the listing route?
That's a very, very important question. So I've been working on this about 2 years, and I've gone through the bank routes, I've gone through private equity routes, I've covered everything you can cover. And I think most of us around the table have funded these businesses out of our own pockets. But the dream here is a bit bigger than all of that. And what I said to myself is that if we bring entrepreneurs around the table, how do we incentivize ourselves? How do we create one key performance indicator that will allow us to grow value between all of ourselves, but still being able to face the challenge of technology? How do we stay ahead? Because these things do move rapidly. And the listing at the end of the day was the single most important thing that I could actually figure out that gave us the ability to bring all of this together. And I think that was the result. All the entrepreneurs around the table have been tried to be acquired before by all the large tech companies, mm-hmm. all of them.
Right.
We've all been through that. But this was a single one where the guy said, but now we've got control of our own future. We've got the ability to create our own value for ourselves and for our shareholders, and let's do this. And that's where it all came from.
And 97% of your revenue is coming from offshore. Did you consider other exchanges around the world as a possible listing route, or was the JSE just the most obvious thing to do, given that most of your operations are here in Johannesburg?
Yeah, so 97% with the mining manufacturing is going to drop to about 60% dollar-based. I think it also went around this from a market perspective. One of the important things, when you want to do a listing, you are dependent on, I think, people, you're dependent on networks, you are dependent on being able to convince people. And a lot of the people around the table are from South African roots. So we know the market, we know the people, and that's a route that we did follow. We did consider a listing on the Mauritian stock market, but we felt that from a market value perspective, currently it's too small to grow the business from that base.
Okay. So I imagine this is going to be a very good rand hedge for South African investors. Not only is it the first tech company come to the JSE in a very long time, but with the bulk of your revenues from offshore, if you're going to place a bet against the rand, then this is potentially a good place to put your money.
Yes. Yeah. And I think what we all have around the table is our focus is to expand and build this in an international tech company. Currently, we've had a look around the world trying to find something very, very similar. We haven't been able to find that. So I think it's quite unique in terms of the proposition, in terms of how we do the things. I think in terms of the skill sets around the table, like Hilton has said, they've been doing that for 10 years. The mining guys have been doing it. Everybody's been doing this type of technology around the table for many, many, many years. So for us, the excitement around this is we can actually create a proper tech company around the world, playing in all of these vertical solutions in the industry four game.
And beyond the acquisitions that you mentioned earlier in our discussion, have you got other acquisitions that you're going to announce post the listing, or is that it for now?
So for now, what we're going to do is we are going to announce these acquisitions in the next few days. Post listing, our focus is going to be then to make sure that the group will operate properly within what we've brought to the table. And then, like I've said, what we have got is we have got acquisitions earmarked for, there's two in Australia and there's around about two in North America, and we do have an expansion plan for the Chinese market, which we believe currently, if we look at our current markets, we are not in that specific market. So we're busy with those plans, kicking off next week to start addressing those markets and those acquisitions.
So if anyone's interested ahead of the debut on the Altex this Thursday, you've published a prospectus already.
Yes.
That's been out for a couple of weeks now. I presume they can find that through your website?
Yeah, it's on the website, yeah.
Okay.
The private placement offer did close last Thursday afternoon. So
okay. So your only option now is to trade?
You're going to trade shares now on the market, yeah.
Okay,
yes.
All right, great. Well, what is your website if people want to get
Our website is foresightholdings.com.
Foresightholdings.com.
Yes.
Great. Well, we were discussing before we started recording that this is the first tech listing on the JSE in an incredibly long time. You were saying the last major tech listing was in the late 90s with EOH,
yes.
And the last actual tech listing of any size was probably 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, so. I think that was around about 2007 and 2008. So again, if you look at the IT sector currently, the space that we are playing in is uniquely focused on data science, data technology, digitization in Industry 4. So our focus is on the IP that the group has created, and that is what we offer to our customers.
Great. Antony van Rensburg is CEO of Foresight Holdings, and Hilton Goodhead is Executive Head of Digitata Innovation. Good luck with the listing on Thursday. I'll be watching it with keen interest, and thank you for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.